Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Cobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Oh, baby, it is Tuesday, July 1st. It's me, Jesse Rowe, King of Crespi, joined as always by Brandon Bullinger, Lord Paramount of the South Bay in Los Angeles, California. We are back. It's Deferred Collusion, and we're in July, buddy. It's a new month. We're a few days away from 4th of July. Brandon, how are you? Got any big plans this weekend?
Jesse Rowe, I got a little plan for you. That's going to see a little guy named Jose Altuve down at Dodger Stadium on the 4th. Taking my daughter, my missus, going with my folks, so it'll be a good little weekend. Of the 4th, I've never been to Dodger Stadium on the 4th of July, so that'll be a first.
Staying for the fireworks, like afterwards?
Yeah, and that was fun. My wife and I were kind of laughing. We went to a game last week. And then we took my daughter to go watch The Sandlot on Friday at Dodger Stadium, which was pretty neat. And now we're going for 4th of July. So it's been a very Dodger-heavy, 3 weeks for us.
Right.
But, Jess, them Dodgers just refuse to lose, Big
they
Daddy.
They do.
It
One
is
thing really
crazy.
Quick.
What's that?
Speaking of The Sandlot, how is my impression of Smalls? Do I look?
Dude,
this is like the Smalls hat right here, dude.
You're absolutely that stage in The Sandlot that wasn't in the movie, of in between Smalls as a boy and then being in his 50s as the color commentator or the play by play
for the Dodgers though.
Pretty legit. Hey, you made it, kid.
Smalls. This is the story of Smalls. He started with a podcast talking about the Dodgers, and then the Dodgers picked it up, and they ended up having him be their color commentary guy. So there you go.
And Benny the Jet Rodriguez was a bench player who could still
Hispanic looking guy with a mustache, and I'm staring right at him. Let's go. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. That is the kind of diverse thinking that you get here and only here at Deferred Collusion. Please like, subscribe, hit us in the comments, whatever you want to do. But Jesse, back to it, dude. It's been a couple days since we talked last. Catch me up.
Yep, Dodgers keep doing what they're doing. They just keep playing great baseball. They they swept the Rockies. And, the Rockies gave them all they could, Brandon, but the Dodgers still swept them. And then they went into Kansas City. It took 2 out of 3 over there at Kauffman Stadium. And, they're looking
You're home
pretty
away
good,
from
Brandon.
Home, Kauffman Stadium.
What?
You're home away from home, Kauffman Stadium.
My favorite stadium, Kauffman Stadium. No, they're obviously looking great, and they're playing great baseball. They have extended their lead in the division to 7.5 games. They're tied for the best record in baseball. And it's to nobody's surprise, but I mean, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, we did have some concerns about where the Dodgers were, because they clearly weren't at their best, and I still feel like they're not at their best. Mm-hmm. I still look at this team and I'm like, this just something doesn't feel right. They don't feel complete to me, and yet regardless of that, they are almost 20 games above 500. They're 8 games up in the division. They're running away with it, best record in baseball potentially, or tied for it. They just look great, and the best part about it is Clayton Kershaw got five strikeouts in Colorado, and now he's three away from breaking it. He pitches tomorrow night against the White Sox.
That dog.
He looked great in Colorado. His stuff looked really good. I mean, for what it is now at this point, he pitched really well. I would have liked to see him go one more inning in that game because he actually, I think he had something like 60-some-odd pitches through six innings or 70-some-odd pitches. Like, he could have pitched another inning, gotten one more strikeout, and potentially, you know, potentially just been one or two away. But Roberts elected to pull him. But he looked great, and he's going for it tomorrow, and I am excited for that. I'm very, very excited. I'll be tuned in.
I'm super fired up, man. It's one of those things. Getting to see Kershaw perform well wasn't necessarily what I was expecting this year. After that,
that wasn't the goal of the season at all. Yeah.
Well, dude, I remember after that, like, start in Cleveland, it was just like, man, is he washed after that first inning? You know, he's getting giving up hard hit balls left and right. This was after like a not so good debut, I think, the week before, but he's really, really settled it down. He's starting to really keep the ball to just softer contact. Gave up that home run in Colorado. But still, dude, if I were to tell you that, you know, in July, Kershaw would have a 4-0 record with a 3.03 ERA and a 1.1 whip, I'd be pretty fired up, dude. I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting of him.
Yeah.
This year, like I had high hopes, but you know, Jesse, you and I have talked about like if everybody's healthy, you don't expect Kershaw to be a postseason starter. You know what I mean? But maybe this milestone is the start to something bigger. What do you think? Do you think? I know it's just the lowly Chicago White Sox. But do you think if Kershaw goes out and dominates, blows through that 3,000K milestone, do you think there's any possible this old dog kind of gets some fresh blood in his system and, you know, maybe a little return to form, becomes a postseason guy?
Well, I mean, I feel like he has returned to form in terms of the best pitcher he can be right now. I think this is the best pitcher that Clayton Kershaw can be right now for a guy that's consistently throwing 89, 90 miles an hour with his fastball. Doesn't have the break on a slider he used to, doesn't have the sharp break on the curveball he used to. He just has learned how to become the best possible pitcher that he can be. And I mean, yeah, so long as he stays healthy and he keeps pitching this way, the numbers don't lie. They are like, if you were to ask me, like, who would I trust more going into a playoff start today, Clayton Kershaw or Dustin May, based on the way they're pitching, I would say Clayton Kershaw.
Dustin May obviously had another stinker of a start, gave up the long ball. And we were just kind of giving him a little pat on the back last episode, too, after limiting the damage to, I think, three runs against the Nationals the series prior. But,
Jess,
I agree with you. To your point, there was a cool little quote from Jack Dreyer. He was talking about Kersh, and he was saying that he believes that he encapsulates the idea of adapt or die. Jack Dreyer is 26. He's been playing in the big leagues since I was 9. He's been through a lot of different stages of who he is as a pitcher. The ability to change how you pitch or how you face a guy is the biggest thing, because there are plenty of guys who are talented with elite stuff, whatever it takes, but they can only do it for so long because they're unwilling to change. I mean, dude, we've seen Kershaw flash in a splitter to that very point, you know, obviously inspired by his teammates, Yoshi Yamamoto, Roki, the like. But is this something, Jess, that you think we will ever see again? Or is this one of those, for lack of a better term, swan songs in baseball where it is the end of a generation, the last of a dying breed? A major league pitcher, one team, and hitting this 3,000K milestone.
I mean, I think it's possible that a pitcher gets to 3,000 strikeouts. Like, I could just think of a few off the top of my head. Paul Skeens comes to mind. He's only 23 years old. You know, he could obviously do it, but I think you actually crunched the numbers on that. What would Paul Skeens need to do to get to
So I don't want to take any stolen value, valor. This is per Jackson Stone at MLB.com. But he wrote, just to put into perspective, so he uses two of the game's most elite arms right now, Tarek Skubal and Paul Skenes.
Yeah.
So to put in perspective the longevity that Kershaw has had to reach 3,000 strikeouts, Tarek Skubal, who notched 225 Ks last season, would need 13 more of those same seasons to reach 3K. For Paul Skenes, who has taken the league, you know, by storm, he had 280 Ks in his first season, which racked in at 239 innings pitched. Jess, he would roughly need 2,300 more innings pitched at this current K per nine pace to reach 3,000 strikeouts. Like I said, that was per Jackson Stone of MLB.com. But those are just some gaudy numbers from a couple of just, I mean, the best in the game, right? I think nobody argues that Tarek Skubal and Paul Skenes are 1A, 1B in MLB right now.
Let's see. Active MLB strikeout leaders. As of right now, Verlander is at the top. So, no, like, yeah, we'll see Chris Sale. We'll probably get to 3,000. He's 472 away.
That's still a few more years, you know.
That's like three more seasons, probably.
Yeah, and then Garrett Cole was around
2,200.
2,250. Obviously, got Tommy John, so it wouldn't be around till maybe his age 40 season.
Yeah, that's going to be tough for Cole. He's going to have to stay healthy, not just be healthy, but stay healthy. Yu Darvish probably won't get there. He's around 2,000 right now. Kevin Gausman won't get there. Nola probably won't get there. He's 1,200 away.
I think is around 2,100. And Charlie Morton is, you know, about.
I'm just looking at age. Yeah, I'm looking at age, and amount right now. Like Luis Castillo's at 1,400. He's 32. Gosh, who's young and around 1,000 right now? Dylan Cease has 1,100 and he's 29. That's going to be tough. I'm looking here.
Hey, I appreciate you giving it the old college try, Jess.
It's going to be tough, dude. I'm looking at these. It's going to be tough, man, because age is a huge factor in a lot of this. Like, Logan Webb is 28 and he's got 900. You know, and like he's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, dude.
He has to basically go pitch till he's 40, give 12 seasons of like 190 strikeouts. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, dude.
And I just don't think he's going to do it. Like, yeah, I think it's going to be. I think it has to be one of the young pitchers now. Even Skubal, he's 28, man. Like, he's got to stay healthy for like 10 years.
Crazy, and it feels like a big ask in this, you know, league that is just riddled with Tommy John surgeries. It's like, you know, we're talking about Cole, like, he's in his mid-30s right now. He's missing this season. He's going to miss considerable time next year. And then what does he come up as, you know, like, he's going to have to make this big change again. And it's tough for that.
And I think Chris Sale gets there, and then I think that, and Cole might get there too, but I think that might be it. Like for a while.
See, I'm not sold that Chris Sale is going to have the health to make it another 500 Ks. You know, that's at least another three seasons. I just don't know that his body's got that in him. And I'm not a Chris Sale hater. I think he is, when healthy, one of the best pitchers of, you know, an era. But
yeah,
we're talking about one of, you know, the top five arms ever, the greatest lefty of this entire generation. Yeah. I mean, this is something that he could have done a few years ago, barring injury.
No, but and it just goes to show. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, but like, he's fought back against injury, diminished velocity, and, you know, a haunting postseason history. All that to be this last man standing on this, you know, proverbial pitcher's mountain, you know. Verlander's, I think he's out with arm injury, right? Isn't he supposed to be on the Giants?
No. I saw him. I was watching Verlander pitch the other day. He was pitching against the White Sox, and dude, so he's on the Giants now. I'm not joking. I think the White Sox hit like 5 hard hit balls to the warning track that like I think would have been home runs on like any other day in the first 2 innings. I was just watching, like, oh my god, like Verlander just does not have much at all anymore. And I don't think he's like pitching terribly, but he just doesn't look look like he has much impact for the Giants right now. I mean, his numbers, he's got a 4.26. He has 55 strikeouts in 67 innings. He got a 1.4 whip. He's like noodle arm. You know what I mean? He's just pitching for numbers at this point. He's just pitching to pitch. And I don't think he's actually helping the Giants win. He's obviously one of the best pitchers of his generation.
To be fair, none of the Giants are helping them win right now.
We'll get to that.
Marlins, it's not been the smoothest transition since old Rafi Devers came over from Boston, but maybe it'll be a little bit better after the All-Star break.
Well, regardless of all that, Kershaw pitches tomorrow. Make sure you guys are tuned in. He's going to probably get to 3,000 strikeouts. I just really fucking hope that he doesn't go like 4 2/3 and he only has 2 strikeouts and then he has to go to Milwaukee to get number 3,000. I really hope that doesn't happen. I really hope he gets 3. Because it's going to be special. It's going to be special. Whether or not Clayton Kershaw pitches for the Dodgers in October this year, for him to do it at Dodger Stadium in front of Dodger fans is a moment that, you know, he's earned it. And, you know, Dodger fans have earned it. They deserve this too. With everything that we've been through with Kershaw, it's just, it's going to be special. So,
when he got his 300K season. I think that was back in 2015. I'm not going to be there obviously tomorrow, but I'll be watching and I'm fired up for him. But, man, Jesse, who do you think there's going to be a Dodger pitcher that hits 300 K's in a season in the next, I don't know, 5 years?
No, I don't think I don't think anybody pitches long enough innings to do that. Kershaw, remember that season? He was going like 7 innings every single night. Seven innings every night. I don't think we'll see that. That's one of the that's a lot to ask because that was one of the all-time greatest seasons ever by a pitcher, and I just don't expect that we can expect that again from a starting pitcher in this era where they're just kept on such a short leash. Clayton Kershaw is the end of a dying breed. He is so special, so old school, and such like a he is the perfect example of a guy like passing the torch to a guy like Skubal, who is like this generation's Kershaw now. He's sort of taking over as this new iteration of Clayton Kershaw.
A pitcher's pitcher, if you will.
And just old school, not a guy that's relying on all the RPMs and the new hydro those new cameras that they have, Edgetronic cameras. You know, he's not relying on all that. Like, he went to Driveline one off season, he did it. It helped him a little bit, but all in all, Clayton Kershaw just did it on his own. You know, he did it his way. And
shouts out to Rick Honeycutt, dude. We love you, honey.
Oh, honey, baby. One more pitcher that we got to talk about here before we get into the meat and potatoes of this episode. Shohei Ohtani pitched again, and he pitched more than one inning, Brandon.
Yeah, he did. Kid was throwing pitches over gas.
Yeah. Mm. Multiple pitches over 100 miles an hour, matched his career high at 102. And just like picking, just like looks amazing. And doesn't look like he's lost a step since getting his second Tommy John surgery. And just curious what you thought. I know it's only 2 innings. How are you feeling about the Shohei Ohtani pitching plan so far and how he looks?
Fired up. No notes. Yep. Kids hitting 102. What the fuck am I supposed to say? And honestly, I have that to say to any like Dodger, like critic, hater. I don't care if you're a fan or not. Jesse, we were talking about, like, is this lame seeing him pitch one inning? I saw him pitch 2, but he hit 102. I don't give a fuck. That's fireworks, daddy-o. That was cool. Jess, Do you notice who he hit these numbers against, dude? It's a familiar face for the old gas station called Ohtani.
So apparently he only likes pitching against...
2.7? What was it?
Yeah, apparently he only likes pitching against Vinny Pasquantino.
Yeah, dude, Jeff Passan had tweeted out that the only other time in Shohei's career that he hit 101.7 was in the World Baseball Classic, also against Vinny Pasquantino, and he hit 102 or something like that. It's just fucking crazy. Yeah. Pasquantino, like, tweeted out back and he just was like, what the fuck? I mean, I would feel like it's, you got to feel like it's a little personal, right? Like, dude, does this guy just hate my face? Like, he finds an extra gear for me?
But also, Vinny Pasquantino, I think he's one of the funnier guys in baseball. I think he has a good sense of humor about it.
Definitely. And I cannot really say that last name, dude. I'm struggling over here.
Pasquantino. Great name in Scrabble, dude.
Pasquantino. Dude, yeah, where's that coming
from? Points in Scrabble. You know, this whole thing has got me thinking because I'm starting to I've been working on a theory that, you know, because obviously Shohei got two Tommy Johns. He's coming off his second Tommy John. But here he is throwing 100 plus miles an hour again. He looks just as good as he did before he got the surgery. And he's 30 years old. He's no spring chicken, Brandon.
Right.
I'm starting to think that this dude didn't get Tommy John surgery, that he got like the Winter Soldier surgery because he got something that no other pitcher has ever gotten. The way that they described it was that it's like a hybrid surgery. It's like some variation of Tommy John mixed with another element of the surgery that uses like a brace for elasticity or something. It's way above my pay grade, but all in all, like if you look at his arm, he has this crazy scar on his arm that like goes up from like the mid forearm past his elbow. It looks like he was in a car accident or something, just a bizarre scar. And it's almost like he was like rebuilt like the $6 million man. You know, like he is there is something fishy going on with his arm, Brandon, because there is no way you should be able to throw just as hard, if not harder, than you did before after two Tommy Johns. I mean, just look at Dustin May, Walker Buehler, Tyler Glasnow. These guys have gotten multiple Tommy Johns. They don't come back throwing harder than they did before after the second time. It just doesn't happen.
Dude,
I think that this guy is I think this is giving credence to the theory that this man is not human.
Either that or he has a doctor named Henry Rowan Gardner, and he is, you know, the second coming of the famed Cubs pitcher, Henry Rowan Gardner, who famously broke his arm and could throw 100 miles an hour, seen in the documentary film Rookie of the Year. Great in-depth piece, really suggest checking it out.
That's true. I think that he got the Rookie of the Year surgery mixed with, like, Dude, he's got the robo arm, man. This is unbelievable. Nobody should be able to come back from two Tommy Johns and throw harder than they did before. I mean, it's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And the fact that he's also our best hitter just blows my mind.
He's a new dad on top of
that. Like, that's what it is. So it's a combination of Winter Soldier surgery and dad strength.
Oh, man. I got to look up the numbers, though. I wonder if he's attempted to steal a base since he started pitching.
That's a good question, because that was like a big question of mine was last year when he had the 50-50 season with him pitching. I didn't think it'd be possible for him to have a 50-50 season because they just wouldn't risk it. I remember what happened in the playoffs in the World Series sliding into second. He dislocated his left shoulder. So,
and that was horrifying. I never wanted to feel
that. That wasn't even his pitching arm. So I can't imagine that they're going to take a ton of risks, especially on days that he's pitching, let alone being in the pitching rotation, for him to be stealing a ton of bases. So I do expect those numbers to come down the more innings he starts to pitch throughout the year. So
give him a grade so far, dude. How do you grade Shohei's pitching thus far?
Oh, I mean, I think it's an A in terms of results and in terms of what we've seen. I think in terms of how it's contributed to the Dodgers winning games. I mean, they lost the game that he pitched against the Royals. I don't remember. Did we lose when he pitched against the who did he pitch against before that? Padres. Did we win that game?
I think so. Now I don't remember.
Yeah. We won the first three of that series. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, another little pitching grade. Dude, how about your boy Justin Robleski?
Love him. Gave him some love in the in our Instagram stories. Follow us. Yeah, by the way, follow us on Instagram, on X, on Blue Sky. Follow us on TikTok. Follow us everywhere. Give him a little bit of love on Instagram, and he saw the story. So
Robo,
he's in our DMs, dude.
Let's go, Robleski, dude. We're diehard fans. Let's go.
Yeah.
Hey, stoked for him though. He had a rough outing to the season when it just seemed like our entire pitching staff was taking on water. He got shelled against the Nationals. But damn, to his credit and that mental fortitude, dude, he's looking like a whole new man. He's looking like a guy that might be coming for Dustin May's spot.
You know, May.
Yeah, he's coming.
You know who is coming for it? Is Emmett Sheehan, because he looked great. He looked great when he came up, but he pitched like a six perfect innings or something just the other day.
Yeah,
nasty. There's and he's looking like he's
coming for the Dodgers, dude. It's very. If you're a Dodgers fan, you're feeling good about this right now.
Yeah. So Sheehan's going to be, I think, a big part of this rotation towards the end of the season. Tyler Glasnow, by the way, little update. He pitched. He really struggled finding the strike zone. He threw like four walks, and he actually fractured somebody's hand on the Giants. Tyler Alexander, I think, he fractured his hand in my pitch. So he's having some trouble with his mechanics right now. But he's on his way back slowly but surely. So help is on the way, Brando. So that's what I'm saying. Like this team is. They're playing great, but they are nowhere near fully operational. And Shohei's only pitching 1 to 2 innings. So we really can't say how good this team is until he's pitching 5 or 6 innings. Glasnow's back. Snell is back. Snell's recovery is slowing down, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, it's just all over the place.
Yeah. It's tough, man. And then, you know, speaking of being all over the place and, you know, needing some reinforcements, dude, left field. Still got Michael Conforto. You may know him as the MLB's lowest qualified batting average, among qualified players.
He's been playing a little better.
He has been playing a little bit better, and you know what? I'm still rooting for him, but it kind of feels like the experiment's over, right?
Well, so we do have some clarity on this because a lot of Dodger fans have been wondering why Conforto is getting so much playing time over Haesung Kim.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, and me too. And it turns out that Tommy Edman is still dealing with an ankle injury that's been nagging him, which is limiting his ability to play outfield. And that's kind of why they don't trust Haesung Kim late in games to be playing a lot of center field or a lot of outfield. And so that's why you're seeing more Kike and Conforto in the lineup as opposed to Haesung Kim, because once Tommy Edman's ankle is better, the Dodgers are fully aware of it. They need to give more at-bats to him because he's just clearly a better offensive option at this point above Michael Conforto, but they just can't put Tommy Edman in that situation yet. So that's the reason why, which does make some sense. And once again, the Dodgers are 7.5 games up. You know, they're tied for the best record in baseball, so we can be a little bit patient with this. But I do expect that later on in the year, Haesung Kim will be getting a lion's share of the playing time.
Let's go, Haesung. We love you, dude. Sarangay.
So speaking of that, though, Dodgers, the Padres and Giants are absolutely reeling here. They are 7.5 games back. I mean, the Dodgers were back of the division by a game just like a month ago. And Padres 7.5 back, Giants 8 back. Both teams are out of the wild card spot.
Wow.
And I think a lot of this, surprisingly, the Padres' offense has just been god awful. They got swept recently. I forget who it was against, but they. I was looking at their lineup, and they only have one player right now over an 800 OPS, and that's Manny Machado. One player. And the Giants, I do think, will be fine because they just signed Austin Barnes. So, you know. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, so who are you more worried about right now, Brandon? Are you more worried, or who do you think, how do I phrase this question? Who do you think has a better chance of making the playoffs right now, the Giants or the Padres?
I think that the Padres have a higher ceiling of talent So I think that can afford them a little bit longer of a skid, if you will. Whereas, as you've mentioned, you know, some offseason additions for the Giants, like Justin Verlander, haven't worked out. The grandson of the win is in a deep slump right now.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You know, Matt Chapman got hurt.
Also, they have not they have not been as good as they would hope since getting Rafi Devers. I mean, they have been struggling. Devers has been struggling a little bit. I know he had like a golden sombrero yesterday, four strikeouts. So they're definitely struggling to score runs. Both teams are struggling to score runs, which is surprising. But also their big free agent signing, Willy Adames. I mean, he's at the Mendoza line with batting average. He's not, his OPS I think is under seven.
So, yeah, and that's the guy you were excited to see the Giants go after and go, man, you're going to plug this guy, you know, in the middle of your lineup, going to be just a producer for you. Necessarily like your home run leader, but like a guy who's going to stir the pot and like get the offense going, get on base or knock guys in, you know, a contact guy. And it's really just hasn't materialized for him yet in a Giants uniform. So for me, I think right now, it looks like the Giants are, you know, in a little bit of a hotter pot, if you will. But I mean, dude, who knows with the Padres long term, like if Michael King or Yu Darvish, when they're going to come back and what form that they're going to be in.
That's what I want to get to here, because we have a trade deadline coming up and both teams are in interesting situations here. The Giants already made their big move. They went out and got Rafi Devers. They traded two pitchers that weren't really doing much for them. One of them is, you know, high end prospect in Kyle Harrison. The Padres are in a weird spot right now, where I could see them going both directions. They could be buyers or they could be sellers, you know? Yeah. And I think that they're on a hair's edge about which direction they're going to go. And I'm leaning towards them being sellers and just recognizing that they're just not going to be good enough this season, even if they do go out and make a big splash, because I think they do need to land somebody in free agency. They have to figure out if they want to stick with the Xander Bogaerts contract or if they want to offload it somehow. They're in deep water with this, and I don't know if they're going to be able to afford to keep both Michael King and Dylan Cease. So this is the time to cash in on one of those guys, right? Like, yeah. I actually think there's a chance that there's more likely of a chance that the Padres sell than they buy, even though I'm probably going to kick myself for this take a month from now when AJ Preller just goes absolutely apeshit at the deadline. But I do think there's a high likelihood, high probability of them selling at the deadline.
Man, you paint a picture that I like. I dig that.
I think the Giants are more likely to be buyers than the Padres are. If I'm serious, because I think the Padres probably have more that they could get back for what they have right now. Does that make sense?
I feel that.
I don't think the Giants have much to give that they could get back a lot. Like, what would they trade? Robbie Ray?
No, I feel that Robbie Ray is a great option, right? But it's also like, all right, well, Logan Webb and Robbie Ray can lead you through a postseason run, though, you know what I mean? And there's not too many pitchers you can add that are going to be a 1-2 like that. Whereas the Padres, man, I just don't think there's any way in hell that after losing in the postseason last year the way they did, having to sit around and hear all offseason that they're, you know, the best team the Dodgers played all postseason, and then just have to hear it from shitty Dodger fans, the rest of the league, etc. I just don't think that there's any way in hell that they stand pat. On top of that, I could even see them overpaying a little bit. However, I don't see them being an all-in team. I when I say overpaying, I think that I could see them make like one impact move, if that maybe means, you know, hey, we'll offload Bogaerts too, or some whatever that means. I don't know, for Padre land, but I just don't think that there is any way that they stand pat with what they got. Their window is closing, and you know, if not now, then when? Like you said, Machado's been the only guy on their team with a 800 plus OPS, And he ain't getting any younger, you know. He is the cornerstone of that franchise. And, you know, like I just mentioned, Yu Darvish is yet to be really seen this season. And he's your ace, you know. He's your vet. And if
he's going to be pitching into his 40s on that contract too.
Yeah,
that's another rough contract because he's looking like he's been slowing down every single time he's on the mound.
Yeah,
and yeah, but he was great in the postseason. But
to your point, you know, about the Padres retooling, you know, we're already seeing the memes about, hey, did the Padres get fleeced in the Soto trade? The war of like CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore and who am I forgetting? Wood. Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. But yeah, James Wood. Yeah. Their combined war is already greater than that of like Soto's in his time there, which I think is a little unfair. It's 3 players to 1. Yeah. But that's the point, right? Is that you overpaid for this guy and didn't make it to the promised land.
That's why I wonder if they'd be likely to trade Dylan Cease and try to keep Michael King, because Michael King is like the last remnant that they got from that Juan Soto trade, because they, you know, they obviously got Michael King back from sending Soto to the Yankees. And if you can keep Michael King and then trade Dylan Cease, you could because he's young, you could probably get some good stuff for Cease. You could probably get cash in right now and get some good stuff. And then you can look into the offseason about potentially packaging a prospect to get a big player or to offload the Bogaerts contract if you're to a stupid team that would take it. Like, let's be real, like I can't think of a team right now that would actually want that contract. It's pretty bad, but you could find a way to offload it by attaching a big prospect that would free up money for you to go out and sign one of the bigger free agents out there in the market. So that is a possibility.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't see where they're at right now. And, you know, they're stuck in kind of a black hole with this Dodger team right now. That's just clearly superior in every way. And it's not just getting a new left fielder that's going to fix it for them. I keep seeing Padre fans saying, oh, we really need a left fielder. It's like, yeah, but that's just not going to fix it, dude. That's not the only thing.
Their bullpen's still pretty good.
A lot of it is like leadership and clubhouse, you know, stuff that they just don't,
Oh, you want leadership, dude? You want clubhouse guys, dude? Well, how about the San Francisco Giants signing Captain Austin Barnes? Does that do anything for you?
That's what I'm saying, dude. That's why I think that move right there, Giants are set, baby. They don't even need to make any other moves. Austin Barnes is a player manager. This is one of my favorite Dodgers of all time. He's one of the worst players I've ever seen. One of the worst hitters I've ever seen, and it did not matter. He's a winning player.
My guy. Did not matter. Love you, Austin Barnes. You know who's not my guy,
Love you, Barnes.
Guy,
good luck in San Francisco. I hope you never win again.
Hey, you know who's not my guy?
Who?
Padres color commentator, whatever. I don't know what his title is, but announcer, Mark Grant.
Yeah.
You know why I got beef with him right now, Jess? Dude, he was besmirching my guy, Max Cansey, and just straight up saying, like, what are we doing here? Manny Machado's the best third baseman in the NL in baseball. And more importantly, Max Muncy is a worse third baseman than Manny Machado. Mark's words, dude, not mine.
So this is for the, because they were talking about all-star in game voting on the Padres broadcast. And they were trying to explain why Manny Machado should be the starting third baseman for the All-Star team, because I guess Max Muncy is getting a lot of votes.
Oops.
And he basically said on the broadcast, like, guys, look, let's just be real. Manny Machado is a better third baseman than Max Muncy. And all right, fine. He's better at playing the position. That's fine. I won't argue with there. You know, Manny Machado is a great third baseman.
Great arm.
But, you know, we did look at the numbers a little bit, Brandon, about who's a better hitter. We did a little deep dive on those numbers, and I just don't think it's as close. I don't think it's as much of a gap as people would like you to believe that Manny Machado is a better hitter than Max Muncy. because we do have the numbers here. We combined this season on Baseball Reference. This season, just 2025, about, because that's what we're voting on, who deserves to be the starter at the All-Star game, right? Is their season in 2025, right? So Manny Machado has a 2.5 war. Max Muncy has a 2.9 war. Manny Machado has an 831 OPS. Max Muncy has an 845 OPS. Manny Machado has a 354 OBP. Max Muncy has a 379 OBP. Machado has an OPS plus of 129. Max Muncy has an OPS plus of 138. By the way, not only does Muncy have more war, but he's played five fewer games than Manny Machado.
Whoa.
So what are the metrics? Remind me, Brandon, what are the metrics by which we go to measure the value a player brings to his team and their overall statistical statistical number that determines who's the best player? Is it war and OPS? Are those the two stats that we actually use to measure how good a player actually is?
I want to say it is war and OPS.
Yeah. So
if it's war and OPS, let's go!
If it's war and OPS, then geez. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers here, and I kind of think Max Muncy is a better player than Manny Machado. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, dude. It's official. July 1st. It's been slammed. Max Muncy is.
I hope Padre fans click on this video and see that take. I really, really do.
They will, dude.
I mean, look, it's one of those things where if Manny Machado is the starting third baseman of the All-Star game, so be it, whatever. But, I mean, you can't. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers here, and yes, he has a higher batting average. But, like, remember, Max Muncy was, like, dog shit for, like, the first 2 months of the season. And he's only started getting good in the past month and a half. So just imagine what his numbers are going to be by the end of the season, Brandon. You know, so...
Hey, on this this rate, you know, it could be dog walking, if you will, you know, if Muncy continues.
He has 0.4 more war in five fewer games. I mean, that's not a small number. Like, you extrapolate that over 20 games, we're talking about, like, two more war.
Yeah.
Than Manny Machado.
Yeah.
Or 30 games, whatever. Yeah, so just hashtag just saying, Padre fans. Mark Grant.
The numbers don't lie, dude. Sorry, we're just numbers not lying kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Max Muncy, starting third baseman of the NL All-Star game. So let's
Max
do it.
Muncy.
We were running out of time here. Two more teams that are reeling, not just the Giants and the Padres. Mets and Yankees are reeling, the two New York teams. Mets had a 7-game losing streak, went 3-13 after sweeping the Nationals a few weeks ago. They're now two games behind Philly after having a pretty decent lead in the NL East. The Yankees had a 6-game losing streak. They're 6-12 since sweeping the Royals on June 12th. Mm. Which New York team do you believe in more, and which team is in bigger trouble, Brandon?
God, dude, I don't know if I believe in either of them right now, but believe in more? Oh, man, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a sucker for pinstripes, dude. I got to go with the Yankees, but
yep.
But just... Jess, I mean, in the American League East, dude, I got a three-team race all of a sudden. Yankees at 48-37, the Rays and the Blue Jays at 47-38. While the Mets, yeah, they had the best record in baseball for a little while. They're 3-7. Man, that away record is nasty, dude. 6 games under .500 on the road.
Yeah.
It's tough. I guess there's something for home cooking, but I feel like their pitching was so good and now it's so crappy for the Mets. Like, it's gonna maybe even off and they'll retake the Phillies. But with the Yankees, it's like they had some silly lead a few weeks ago and we look up and now it's a 3-dog race. And it's like,
yeah. And I'm not convinced that they can hold that, because I think that the Blue Jays have some good players, and I think that the Rays are a really, really, really solid team. And the Rays just figure out ways to do it every year. And, you know, but I agree with you. I still think I have more faith in the Yankees, specifically, like, going on a playoff run if they make the playoffs, because the Mets, even if they make the playoffs, even if they win the division, they still have to get through the gauntlet of the National League. They'd still have to beat the Phillies. They'd still have to beat the Cubs. They'd have to beat one of the, you know, teams in the West potentially that would make the wild card. Maybe the Cardinals right now are playing pretty good baseball. And of course, a small indie independent, you know, low but small market team called the Dodgers. They'd have to get past as well. And the Yankees, I think, could still make the World Series with the team that they have right now, even though I don't think that they have a great team. I think that, like, I do believe that the Tigers are a better team, but the Yankees are very experienced. They do have Max Fried at the helm, who has tons of experience in postseason baseball. But him as their ace, I just don't know if I believe in. Like, he just got shelled by the Blue Jays today, and I just don't know if I believe he is good enough to anchor that rotation consistently to go all the way over the Tigers. But I do think that the Yankees would have a better shot of getting past the Tigers or the Astros than the Mets would of getting past the Phillies, Dodgers, Cubs, Padres, Cardinals. You know, it just doesn't seem as likely to me at this point.
Yeah, it's like the many-headed Hydra, right? The Tigers, while they're, you know, I've been arguably the best team in baseball all year, you know, kind of don't have that depth, or I guess maybe the sticker shock of some of the names, you know, like Zach McKenstry's having a hell of a year. Spencer Torkelson has obviously been great. Javi Baez.
Bounce back candidate. Yeah. They have two guys on the team, like Javi and Torkelson. Both guys are like bounce back candidate, like comeback players of the year candidates for sure.
Totally. And there's just there's something about the Tigers that makes you go like, oh, I don't want to face these guys. They're scrappy. They've been playing well, and you know, they've got some A tier talent. You know, with freaking.
Well, they have the best pitcher in baseball, you know? Too. They have the best pitcher in baseball in Skubal. Did you see him on Sunday Night Baseball, by the way, against the Twins?
I missed it, no.
Oh, my God, dude. I mean, this was unreal. He was unhittable, and he, you know, he pitched a Maddux earlier in the year, too. Yeah. He's just been fucking...
Dude, Sonny Gray just threw a Maddux.
I know, I saw that. The Cardinals are good, dude. The Cardinals are playing some good baseball.
Dude,
nobody's more upset about the Cardinals playing good baseball than Nolan Arenado is, by the way. he's so annoyed about it. He was like, he turned down that trade to the Astros because he thought that he was going to get traded to the Yankees or the Dodgers, and then... here he is, and the Cardinals are actually pretty good. So, you know, sorry, Nolan.
It's fun. You want to see him, you know, be relevant, I guess. It felt like the Cardinals were the big bads in the NL for a decade or two there, and
yeah,
they kind of faded. But we'll see. I think St. Louis fans deserve a little bit more. But Jess, speaking of fans, a certain fan out in the desert, out in Arizona. Isn't welcome anymore for being involved in one too many home run plays. Did you see that? Did you see this clip?
Yeah, this. So is it five different times or four different times? I wrote down five different times. I don't know if it's entirely accurate.
It wasn't clear if this was the fifth one or if this was, you know, there was four other incidents including this one. But
So he has essentially interfered with a home run ball four or five different times over the last four seasons, where he's reached his glove over the fence, interfering with an outfielder catching the ball. And now he has finally been banned for the rest of the season by the Diamondbacks. I just have to say, this is one hell of a run, dude. I mean, unbelievable run by this guy. How
crazy.
I mean, because there's that Dodger fan that caught a lot of home run balls a couple of years back. He's the guy that caught the Justin Turner walk-off home run against the Cubs in 2017. I remember that guy catching a lot of home run balls. There's obviously Zach Hample, the world's worst baseball fan. He catches a lot of foul balls and home run balls. But this guy, to interfere with this many games without getting caught, without getting kicked out and banned,
so
I mean, dude, you were playing with fire and – it took a long time for you to get burned, so well done. Kudos to this guy.
And genuinely, I'm just super impressed that you found a home run that many times. Like, dude, that guy is either those are the luckiest seats or that guy is playing the numbers and knows when somebody's going to be in town. Like, oh, this guy's due to hit one in left center field again.
Yeah, well, it's just you know what has to happen in order for him to get that many? there has to be a lot of games where there's nobody sitting in those seats. You know what I mean?
Because the videos that I saw, there was looked like pretty good crowds, but maybe you're right. Okay. Maybe it wasn't too populated. But I don't know. Maybe he's just been going to Zach Gallen games, dude, because his ERA is through the roof this season.
Yeah, and no Corbin Burns anymore. It's not looking good for the Diamondbacks, but
no, you know. Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah.
Eugenio Suarez, you are a New York Yankee. Anyways.
Yeah, well, they. You know what? That actually, I think, could happen, Brandon. I do think that
Jesse,
could happen.
You know what I want to see happen? And we haven't talked a lot about trade deadline stuff, dude.
What?
I want to see the Dodgers go after Seth Lugo from the Kansas City Royals. Dodger fans may remember him being on the Padres a couple years ago, really overperformed, and has considered that, or excuse me, continued that overproduction in terms of, you know, his contract and everything, and I think was just kind of expected of Seth Lugo. But he's been great. Cy Young votes the last couple of seasons. But yeah, he shoved it up our ass the other day, but would love to see him in some Dodger blue. That's all.
I agree. Well, I mean, I don't know if I agree. It really depends on what happens with Blake Snell and Tyler Glass. Now it depends on how they look. Cause if they're both back and healthy, then I don't know if we're going to need them, but,
I don't know what's going on with Blake. That's all.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. All right. Let's do the standings and let's wrap up. Let's do these quick too. Cause I got to get going. I'll do the NL West and I'll do the NL and you can do the AL.
Sounds good.
All right. NL West standings updates, Colorado Rockies, 33.5 back. They are hanging on by a thread. 19-65. Diamondbacks are at 500, 42-42. They're 10.5 back. The Giants have fallen 8 games back. They're 45-40. Padres not far ahead, 7.5 back at 45-39. And those pesky small market Los Angeles Dodgers are 53-32. They are tops in the league. Going on to the NL Central, the Pittsburgh Pirates, 14 back at 36-50. The Cincinnati Reds have been playing some decent baseball. They're 44-41. They're 5.5 back. Chase Burns, their big prospect, pitched well in his first game, got absolutely smoked yesterday at Fenway Park. Only recorded one out, gave up like 6 runs. They're 44-41. Cardinals, they are in a wild card spot right now. They're 47-39. They're 3 back. Milwaukee is 47-37. They are 2 back. Our pick to win the division. Watch out for them. And they might have a pitcher better than Paul Skeens, brother. Jake Mizorowski might be better than Paul Skeens. We'll see. But he's worth tuning
into. And I just also want to talk about real quick. I know I said a couple episodes ago that I think the Cubs could be the biggest thorn in the side of the Dodgers in a potential postseason matchup.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel that way. But, dude, the Cubs had like a 9 or 8 game division lead, and the Brewers have just chipped away. They have been relentless, and shouts out the Cardinals for being right there, too. I did not see that coming. I thought this one was put away early.
I agree. The Cubs they still have a really good run differential at plus 104. They have the best in the league, I think, are the second best in baseball at plus 104, but they have, they're 4-6 in their last 10. They are they have a 2-game lead. They're 49-35. So let's see if they can hold on. Going on to the NL East, the Washington Nationals are 14.5 back. They're 35-49. The Miami Marlins are 37-45. They're 11.5 back, but they have a 7-game winning streak, Brandon. 7-game winning streak.
Pretty sick.
The Atlanta Braves just can't seem to put together a decent stretch this year. They are 38-45. They're 11 back. And then we go to the New York Mets at 48-37. They're 2 back of those Philadelphia Phillies, our pick to win the division at 50-35. That is your National League standings.
Wow, dude. Shouts out Trey Turner. I think he has the most hits in baseball right now. Captain America loved him as a Dodger. Wasn't the best fit. Jess, why don't we just start off with that American League East as we were talking. Sitting down in the basement, those lowly Baltimore Orioles, 37-47, 10.5 games back. What can I say that hasn't been said already? They are taking on water, and it doesn't seem like there's any way of getting aloft again this year.
Their offense is going a little bit better. Their pitching is not.
Yeah, dude, it's been bad. A lot of injuries and whatnot for them. So, you know, I guess if you're a fan, you can kind of take a little solace in that. Like, hey, we weren't ever at full strength. But, yeah, you would expect this new ownership to do something, and they've really underperformed for the fans, in my opinion. Speaking of that, the Red Sox, 42-44, another ownership that I don't know what the hell they're doing, period. Full stop.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. A lot of people are in Dodgerland are hoping that the struggles of Walker Buehler will mean that he'll be DFA'd and picked up by the Dodgers only to rekindle some October magic. Jess, what do you think of that?
I mean, I would love to have him back, obviously, but he's been pretty bad this year. It's hard to see. It's not a good place for him to pitch, that's for sure.
He had a quote that basically was saying, you know, he feels like he's fighting for a spot in the league right now, that not many pitchers have a 7 ERA in the league. But
hey, I'll take him just to get that stench off him, you know?
Absolutely.
Just get that stench off him, yeah.
We're rooting for you, Walker. Blue Jays, 47-38, tied with the – where does the Rays play out of? St. Pete Rays at 47-38. Tied at one game behind the division leading New York Yankees at 47-38.
48-37.
Sorry, yes, sir. 48-37. Out in the American League Central, we got the Chicago White Sox 28-56. Only thing of note, old friend Miguel Vargas will be getting his World Series ring from the Dodgers this weekend while the White Sox are in town. The Royals continue to struggle. Their old friend Whit Merrifield officially called it a career this week. Claps to him. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers, are really struggling. Seven games under 500. What am I talking about? Brutal. Not what we thought when we were thinking of the Royals this offseason at all, Jess.
Nope.
Really thought they'd be taking a step forward. And boy, would I like to see Seth Lugo traded to the Dodgers. The Minnesota Twins, 40-44. I got nothing to say about them because I don't think they're worth talking about. Do something or sell the team. Cleveland Guardians, agreed. They had a bad month, but are only 11.5 games back in second place at 40-42. What a dog shit division that American League Central is. And I believe tied for the best record in baseball, the Detroit Tigers at 53-32. I think we've spoken enough about the Tigers today.
We have. We gave them their flowers.
Yeah, shouts out. American League West, my shame, my embarrassment. John Fisher's Sacramento Athletics sitting at 35-52. 16.5 games back. Luis Severino just can't stop talking shit, doing his best to get traded. Has like a 2.27 ERA on the road and like a 6-something.
He really wanted that he signed that contract, went to a place that nobody wanted to play, and then started complaining immediately because he just wants somebody else to take the contract. He's trying to finagle the league here, Brandon.
Did you see that picture of him seeing Sutter Health Park for the first time after signing that deal in the offseason? He's got his hands in his pocket staring at the field like, what the fuck? And Jess, I think that was the moment where he knew. He's like, yeah, I got to get out of this. This is ridiculous. I don't think he's fucking gaining anybody, but I think he took the most money he could and now is being a disgruntled employee. You know what?
It's like the popular person that like went off and like went to the big city, got a good job in the big city, but he's just been like he feels like he's lost that salt of the earth aspect of himself. He's lost connection with humanity, so he decided to move back home. You know what I mean? He hasn't been home in a long time. He's like, I'm gonna move back home. I gotta be with real people again. And he walks out and then he sees like, wait, I'm like living in the fucking Inland Empire now. Oh shit. I gotta get the fuck out of here, man.
Like, oh no, I'm in Barstow, dude.
Yeah, I should have taken this job.
The Texas Rangers, the only team in the league that doesn't celebrate Pride Night, at 41-44. I thought that was interesting. I guess for the last like three or four seasons in a row, when the Orioles have hosted the Rangers, it's been on the Orioles Pride Night. And I guess the Rangers are the only club that doesn't have a Pride Night in the MLB. I thought that was fun. The Angels, 41-42.
Some lighthearted trolling.
Love it. Love it. We're allies. The Angels, 41-42. Sans Ron Washington, they're flirting around 500. Joe Adell's been playing well. Yeah, we love you, Ron. Just like a great ambassador for the game. Love that guy.
Yeah.
The Mariners, 44-40. Fucking goddamn it. Six games back. Just
go get a bat, dude. Go get a bat.
George Kirby's pitching better. And I'm pissed. This is awful.
George Kirby's pitching better too. He's like he's starting to get back into it. And like they have such good pitchers. Go get a bat, man. Make something happen. The season Cal Raleigh is having, dude, a potential MVP season right now. You gotta supplement it with some more offense. Like you can't rely on your catcher to carry you all season. You know, you gotta go get something.
I'm not even joking, dude. I think that the Mariners are one aggressive trade deadline away from like punching their ticket to a division series, dude.
They
like,
are my pick.
Fuck the wild.
To go to the
card,
World Series. They are my AL pick to go to the World Series. They have the pitching to do it. They just need to pull the trigger on a big move.
Fucking reinforcements, dude.
Yep.
And then everyone's favorite horror villain. You know, you're Michael Myers, you're Jason Voorhees. Always just perpetually ever getting closer. The Houston
Slowly
Astros,
but surely.
Yep. 50-34. They've looked great, dude.
They're doing it without Jordan.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Jordan, another setback. And Jess, is there any timetable on Jordan's return right now?
He was the Dana Brown said that he was supposed to come back literally, or they thought he could come back for the next week's series, this weekend, series against the Dodgers. But now it's looking like he's his pain has swelled up in his hand again, and now there's it's indefinite. He's going to go see a specialist, and whenever they say specialist, that always means he's probably going to get some hand surgery, which means he might be like, he could be like 2 months away, he could be 4 weeks away, he could be 2 weeks away, he could be a season away. You know, we don't.
Jesse, I'm going to make a bet right now that he is coming back. The hand is not bugging him that much. He doesn't want to make his debut back at Dodger Stadium, doesn't want to get hurt feelings, and will return back at home in Houston like the gosh darn son of a gun that he is.
Wow. Well, that is a take. I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know.
All right,
dude.
Bro. This was a fun one. I got to wrap up here, but Dodgers take on the Chicago White Sox. Remember to tune in tomorrow. Kershaw's on the mound going for 3,000. Yamamoto's on the mound tonight. The Astros are in town this weekend for the 4th of July. Celebrate the birth date of America by watching the Dodgers beat America's biggest villain.
That's right.
So go tune in. Brandon, love you, buddy.
Love you, Big Jess. Always a pleasure. Thank you guys for joining us. Have a great weekend. Be safe out there. And Deferred Collusion, we love you.
We out, baby.